Hey, I'm going to switch microphones if that's okay. You ready for this, Mark? Ready for this transition?
Oh.
What is the story with this section here? Okay, I want to start. I'm going to speak for about 15 or 20 minutes this morning, not that long, so I want to have a time of prayer and for to sing a few songs, so as well as we finish. I want to start off with a story, though, and let's not open our Bibles yet. I heard a story there during the week. It was an interesting story as I was listening to some tapes from a guy called Brother Silas, who works in the Pentecostal church, I believe, in Africa. And he works in the interior there, and he's very much involved in leading people to Christ there. Anyway, he had this amazing story that happened during the week. Well, it happened a few years ago, but I heard it during the week. He used to plant churches in Kenya, and he used to go from village to village planting churches, and he used to stop at the village. God's power used to come, and hundreds and thousands of people used to come to faith as he traveled around Kenya. Anyway, this one day he was traveling through Kenya in the jungle, very thick jungle, to go to the next village. And he passed by this hilltop. And on this hilltop was about 500 or 600 baboons. And as he was walking by, he said to himself, that's very interesting. And he stopped to look at them, and they were doing all sorts of things as baboons do, scratching each other and eating and all sorts of exciting things. You ever gone to the zoo? Anyway, he left there, and the word of the Lord came to him. And the Lord said, turn around and preach to the hillside. And he was like, okay, they're baboons, Lord. So he went to walk away, thinking that was just something in his mind. Anyway, he eventually the Lord really convicted him with this word, turn around and preach to the hillside. So he turned around, thinking in his mind of Matthew, preach the word to all creation. And he stood there and he preached the gospel to this hillside in faith. And he gave it absolute socks. Talked about the redemptive power of Jesus Christ. He talked about the fact that we were no longer in communion with Jesus. And he gave it loads. And the baboons stopped for a while and then went back to scratching each other's bums or whatever else they do. And he went to walk away again. And when he went to walk away again, the word of the Lord came to him and said, give the invitation. He's like, what? Give the invitation for, you know, to accept Christ. And he's like, no, this has got to be me. This is completely weird. So anyway, he's really convicted by it. So he stood there and he says, if any of you wants to repent and accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, do that now. And of course, nothing happened. You're thinking Rob's lost it here now, I know. But nothing happened, of course. So he went to walk away. And next thing from behind him, he heard this rushing sound of thousands of baboons going to kill him. No, it happened. He heard this rushing sound, and hundreds of Kenyan women who'd been hiding behind the hill in fear of their lives had heard the message, and they came and they accepted Christ. And he went into the village for 3 days, and God's power was released there mightily. Is that a good story? And I think I want to speak on 2 Kings 6:17, so you just want to open that very quickly. That's 2 Kings 6:17. Now the essence and the reason why I tell 2 Kings 6:17, and the essence of that story is that sometimes as individuals and sometimes corporately as well, as we are in the moment of core, that's 2 Kings 6:17, we are presented with a situation that in our temporal eyes and in the eyes of us as humans looks completely impossible. It looks completely futile for us to even engage in it. And in the passage that I briefly want to speak on this morning, this 2 Kings 6:17, we see this very much happening to the servant of Elisha. And the verse I want to look on is, Elisha prayed, O Lord, open his eyes, and he may see. Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked, and he saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So the context of this story is the king of Aram was trying to kill Israel's army all the time. And every time the king of Aram tried to attack the king of Israel, Elisha would tell the king of Israel where they were going to attack, and the Arameans never succeeded in their attacks. So the king of Aramean said, what the heck is going on here? Every time I go to attack them, someone is telling them where I'm going to attack and I can't succeed. So he gathers his generals around and he says, which one of you is a traitor? And they say, none of us is a traitor, O king of Aram. It's actually Elisha, because through his prophetic abilities, telling the people of Israel where I'm going to attack, don't go there. So the king of Aram says, let's go and kill Elisha. So he goes to a place called Dothan, and he surrounds the city of Dothan where Elisha and his servant were. And the servant wakes up in the morning after a good night's sleep, and he opens his veranda, and there he is surrounded by this crowd of enemies. And his first reaction is, oh crap, what are we going to do now? Like that guy on the hillside, feeling God say, you know, preach to this hillside of baboons, not knowing why he was meant to do it, but he did it. So the essence of what I want to say this morning is, when we're called to do something that we don't understand, what is our posture? Is it a posture of turning back as Lot's wife did, or is it a posture of continuing to go into what God has called us? And this is very prevalent for us as a church. In Core, we run out of money now in the end of June. Okay, maybe it's July. But that is a real, being surrounded by enemies. The church will run out of money at that time. And we have tax rebates and various things coming in. But we as a people are faced with that. Now, I know some of you are new here this morning and you're not from Core, but even individually in your lives, as Christians, we are always faced with things that seem impossible. So what is our posture? Well, yesterday I was doing this talk up in my attic. We converted my attic, as many of you know, to be a study place. We forgot to put in air conditioning, and yesterday it turned into a sauna. As I was sitting there sweating, trying to prepare for this talk, I really felt God say that we are called to trust in our heart when it seems the hardest. And I was just writing those words down, and the phone rang, and it was Dilith. And she said to me, Rob, she was crying, she says, Rob, I've just had a crash. And I was like, oh my God, are you okay? And my automatic reaction was to this sense of, well, who did that, this blame? How do we get to this place? And it got worse. She said, it's got worse. The kids are okay, but I crashed into a Jag. And I was like, oh my God. And then she said, it's got even worse. That Jag crashed into a new Merc. So that suddenly resonated with me, called to trust in our heart when it seems the hardest. We say these things all the time, we preach them, of like it's hard to trust. But when these things really happen, that's when the rubber hits the road. So it's not just in my life we see it, or in your lives, we see it in the Bible. We prayed it in the upper room there this morning, about Moses who waited on the Red Sea. After leading the people out of Israel, out of captivity, he stood there with these maybe 500,000 people behind him with no way forward. And the people start to grumble then. We talked about that as well this morning. The people start to grumble at the leader and saying, where are we going to go? And Moses just had to say, I believe in you, God. And then he parted the Red Sea. So again, we had that posture of belief. Jeremiah in the cistern, the promises of Jeremiah to actually see God's kingdom advance. He ended up being thrown into the cistern, left for dead. Daniel in the lion's den. Paul and Silas in prison in the New Testament. Peter in prison. The list goes on and on. Naomi and Ruth, constantly people who are in a situation of, what the heck are we going to do here? How are we going to break through? And God looks and sees, what are you going to do? What are you as individuals, what are you as a church going to do? And this reminds you of the story to Emmaus. On the road to Emmaus, if you remember, there was two guys again, as there was with Elisha and also with the servant. There was two guys who are walking away from their calling. They're walking towards Emmaus, which signifies they're walking from Jerusalem, where Jesus told them to stay, to Emmaus. They were walking away and they were downcast. Jesus comes alongside them. What does he do? It says, their eyes were opened and they recognized him and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? So here's the biblical understanding. Scotty talked about it a few months ago about the heart. There's a link between the eyes and the heart. how you view your surroundings, how you view your present situation with your eyes will affect the character, will affect how you live, will affect your relationship. And here was these two guys who were told that Jesus would come back. They didn't believe for understandable circumstances. They walked away. But what did Jesus do? He opened their eyes by the breaking of bread, the whole symbolism of communion together, and then their hearts burned within them. So here we see these two stories of people standing in a situation that doesn't look the way it should work out, and God opens their eyes, and then their hearts burn within them. We sung already with this idea of caught in the middle. See, we, earlier on in that song, we are caught in the middle between citizens of heaven, where there's total trust of God, and actually earthly places where there's total mistrust. And we are called in that middle ground, if you like, and ask the question, what are we going to do? How are we going to believe? What is your posture? And all around us, isn't there, there's these stories from CNN and Sky News about terror, about this is happening around the world, that's happening around the world. And we can sometimes retract into this way and this posture of unbelief. I just want to share this story from a guy to finish here about Mahesh Shavda. Has anyone heard of Mahesh Shavda? We called him Mahesh Shavda here in Cor because he used to push people over. But that's not to negate, because the man has a powerful ministry and he's seen amazing things. Back in 1985, Mahesh was having his fourth child and his wife Bonnie became pregnant. And after about 3 months, Bonnie started bleeding really, really heavily. And she was really concerned about this pregnancy. So she went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you need to go and lie down for 3 months and just do nothing. And if you know these guys, when I read about them doing that, was very hard. Anyway, she went home and she started just doing nothing. And the bleeding got worse and worse and worse and worse. So eventually, after 5 months then, into the pregnancy, she went into the hospital, and the doctor said, this baby isn't going to live. And she was lying on the bed, and Bonnie said, I really believe this baby will live. God has told me it will live. So Bonnie said, I want to try and deliver this baby myself, which is just crazy for those parents amongst us. Anyway, she went to the operating theatre, and the baby was delivered, and it was 1.2 pounds in weight. And listening to the story during the week, Mahesh says it was like a little rabbit or something. It was absolutely tiny. And the next day, Mahesh was to go to a place in Africa, in Zaire, to do this massive ministry to hundreds of thousands upon people out there. And God said to him when he was holding the child, he says, I still want you to go to Africa and preach the word. And he said, I can't go. This is my child. And the doctor said, well, this child is going to die. It's probably the best thing for you to go, is that's going to die in the next hour or the next day or so. But Mahesh really struggled with this. And Bonnie prayed, his wife, and felt them say, you should go. So he went up to the baby, named it Aaron. He anointed the baby Aaron. And he left thinking that he'd never see that child again. Anyway, he went to Africa, and he went right into the interior of Zaire, I think it was, and he preached the gospel, and hundreds of thousands of people came to faith there through his ministry. He spent about 3 or 4 weeks on these healing ministries. And on the last day of his time out there, he felt God say that there was a young boy who had just died and that Jesus wanted to resurrect him from the dead. So he gave that word, and this father ran forward and said, yes, my son has just died. And he was very upset, and this all brought the whole thing up for Mahesh about his son dying. And he said, well, let's go pray with him. So they prayed with him, and like with Elisha, he continued to pray for hour after hour, and the boy came back to life. And in Mahesh's book, there's actually the copy of the death certificate. But always in this background for Mahesh was like, well, my own son has died, but yet this son has life. This isn't fair. Anyway, he leaves Zimbabwe, and he gets to a phone after, I think it was 6 or 7 weeks, and talks to Bonnie. And Bonnie said, you won't believe this, but Aaron has made a complete recovery. He started putting on weight. He started, the hemorrhaging in his brain has stopped. His limbs have dramatically started to grow. And he's alive today, this guy Aaron, and he's now ministering in God's church. Isn't that an amazing story? Like, I have to say, guys, when I heard that, how can you leave your child? How can you do that? But he was faithful to the word that God had given him. Like that fellow with the hillside of baboons was faithful to the word that God had given him. And for us, like it was in the servant with Elisha, it's difficult to actually believe in those promises. But we must remember that he who has promised us will bring it to completion, either individually or either corporately. But here's the thing to finish. In both situations, there was two people. In Kings, there was the prophet and there was Elisha. On the road to Emmaus, there was the two that were walking away. We exist as a body. We don't exist as individuals. And the moral of those stories is that coming alongside each other in those difficult times when we're walking away is essential. Because without that, we just become individualistic. We just become focused on our own understanding. But yet coming together in that understanding that Jesus is with us is the central message of what I'm trying to say here this morning. So what I want us to do is to just pray into that, because I think it's really important that we really ask God for more faith corporately and individually. And we really ask God, what situation is our heart? Are we walking away to Emmaus, or are we walking back to Jerusalem? And I've walked to Emmaus metaphorically many times, but God opens our eyes and brings us back. And maybe you're not feeling that way right now, and that's brilliant. I'm so happy that you're not. But maybe there's other people around you that do feel that way. And for us as a church then, corporately, we're called, the words over and over again over this church, we're to stand as a third day church to believe in the promises that have been prayed over. Third day being a resurrection church and receiving the power of God for this nation. So is that okay? Let's stand and let's pray for that. And Tim, if you can come up and let's just begin to really worship God. So how you see things in life will really affect your heart or how you live. And Proverbs 4:23 says, "Guard your hearts, for they are the wellsprings of your life." Guard your heart, for they are the wellsprings of your life.